Around the time that I first read Stuart Brown's book about play last winter, our household was having its own version of a nightly romp, or what Maurice Sendak might have called a wild rumpus. With our then 10-month-old son in tow, we would plop down on the bed, trying to get as close to the center as possible, away from the edges, and then taking our lead from Dean, for about 20 minutes or so, we would flop down and roll around, all the while making friendly monster noises that sounded kind of like this. Grrr. As an almost one-year-old, Dean had some stellar moves that would be a little hard to pull off in a grown-up body. These included the grab your feet and pull them all the way up to your head move. He also had a move where he would stand up and just throw himself down and seem to love it. And he also had a little proto-somersault that required a little adult encouragement. But though lacking Dean's flexibility, through this rumpusing the adults, we parents found ourselves reconstituted through those 20 minutes in a more silly, childlike, and relaxed form. And for as long as this stage lasted, I think it was just a few weeks, I would think to myself, this is the best time of the day. Today, like every other day, we wake up empty. Don't open the door to the study and begin reading. Take down a musical instrument. Let the beauty we love be what we do. There are hundreds of ways to kneel and kiss the ground. So as you may have gathered, there was no seeming purpose to the nightly rumpus in the Dowdle Fowler house beyond being silly and having fun. And that seeming lack of purpose is one of the ways that Dr. Stuart Brown would define play. So what is play? My guess is that each of us would have our own way of describing it, or at the very least, we each have our own ideas about what counts as it. You heard each of the children up here had a different idea of what their favorite game was. That diversity of perspectives is one of the reasons that, although he's a professional expert, Stuart Brown says he hates to define play. That and the fact that there's something primal and ephemeral to it, that when we try to put it into words, it loses some of its essence. He says that it's a little bit like trying to explain why a joke is funny. If you start trying to do that, you risk taking some of the joy and magic out of it. And he actually said that the first time he even was willing to put some parameters around play was when he was giving a presentation to a group of engineers. And he knew that if he needed to have a certain set points in order to get his point across. So what came out of that were these seven characteristics. The first is that seeming lack of purpose. It also, to be play, has to be voluntary, he says, and inherently attractive. In other words, it needs to be fun. Play also offers us freedom from time and from self-consciousness, he says. When we're playing, we lose track of time and we feel ourselves to be part of something larger than ourselves. Do you know what that feels like when you just lose track of a whole hour? True play also has the potential for improvisation, he says. And finally, it has continuation desire, which is a fancy way of saying we want to keep doing it. So why should we do play? Why is it important? Well, the irony of play, Brown says, is that even though it looks like it has no purpose, right, it seems like there's no reason we're doing it, it actually does have a deep purpose in our lives. Going back to that rumpus in our household, play is the way that infants develop their brains and the way that children develop their brains. And maybe that's not shocking because we think about play as something that children do. It's almost like their job. But Brown argues that adults need to play as much as children, in part because our brains keep developing our whole lives, which scientists have learned. But if we pan out a little bit from the level of our neurons and synapses, play allows us to live the best possible lives we can and to be the best possible people we can. And while a lack of play may not land us in the emergency room, it's like a chronic condition that, when left untreated over time, will sap us and drain us and leave us hollowed out. The opposite of play is not work, Brown writes. It's depression. The opposite of play is depression. So let's think about, what does play allow us to do? Well, one of the biggest bonuses of play, Brown says, is that it brings people together. And play is a really effective means to bring people together across lines of difference. Many years ago, when I was a senior in high school, and I won't tell you where, to protect the innocent, I had a very silly experience that highlighted the power of play to bring people together. Divided as we were along many typical high school fault lines, my senior class was miraculously brought together by the spirit of play during a tradition that came to be known as the senior class prank. Each spring, it was a tradition that the departing class would pull a lighthearted prank in a friendly way, but at the expense of others in the school. And I can't remember whose idea it was, but miraculously, we developed a consensus around the concept of ordering a box of bumper stickers that all read, "I heart the class of 96. So when prank day dawned, it was a sunny and glorious day. We crept outside to the faculty parking lot and to the surrounding streets, and carefully and in a highly coordinated effort, we carefully affixed the bumper stickers to the bumpers of teachers' cars and underclassmen's cars and administrators' cars. We practiced equality. No one was exempt. And I think that that definition of play about losing consciousness and being in the moment overtook one of my classmates, who seemed to forget that if you put a bumper sticker on a car door instead of a bumper, it could create problems later while trying to take it off. And if memory serves, it was the discovery of that bumper sticker by a delightful art teacher that brought to an end that session of play. Of course, we tried to have fun in the hour that followed, when just having been found out, we had to remove every bumper sticker we had just put on. And I seem to remember we had to raise some money to deal with the ill-fated door as well. Though our grand vision of cars hitting the streets proclaiming the driver's love for us was never realized, looking back, that was a moment that strangely bonded our diverse and divergent class more than anything more serious had ever managed to. The power of play, perhaps. Rumi writes, "Out beyond the ideas of wrongdoing and rightdoing, there is a field. I'll meet you there. When the soul lies down in that grass, the world is too full to talk about. Ideas, language, even the phrase each other doesn't make sense." So play can bring people together. I also think that play can alleviate anxiety and allow us to move through challenging situations with grace. Play can help us get through our deer in the headlights moments. Stuart Brown tells a great story in his book about a CEO who, after a very bad quarter in the life of his company, gathered all the employees together in the conference room, and of course everyone was expecting to be chewed out for this terrible quarter they'd had. And instead of this report, the CEO did something very unexpected. First, he said that he would take responsibility for all the failings. And then he told them all to look under their chairs. And underneath each seat, there was a yellow foam dart. And he then invited everyone in the room to throw their darts at him. This is what Brown writes about it. "The air was filled with flying yellow projectiles, and the atmosphere was completely transformed. The CEO went on to explain that they were going to turn things around, but the most important point of the talk was nonverbal. The foam darts told everyone that the situation wasn't so dire. Most important, that playful invitation said it was okay to have some setbacks and okay to admit failures, to take the hit and figure out a way to move forward." Now, what about when life presents us with a situation, though, that is dire, that is a life and death situation, or a situation that is so serious and grave it seems hard to find any lightness embedded in it? I think it's important to acknowledge in a sermon on play that seriousness has a place too. Sometimes being too playful or too jokey can be a way of avoiding talking about things that are hard, or being deeply present to something that's really uncomfortable or scary or sad. So sometimes we need to be serious. And Brown himself acknowledges that. He says that we need work to go with our play, and we need some structure to go with our silliness, and also that we need serious conversation to go with our jokes. But he also said something interesting to me, which is that sometimes a dose of playfulness can give our soul the fortification it needs to go into and tackle what is hard or serious. So it's not that our play takes away the need to actually be able to be serious, but sometimes it can help us go into and do that work. When I first read the description of those yellow foam objects flying through a corporate conference room, it took me back to a moment in my life of flying objects in a seemingly incongruous setting. Some of you here in the congregation know that when I was 12, I had a pretty serious blood disorder. And this church was an incredibly life-saving support for me and my family. And we were also very lucky to have wonderful medical care at St. Christopher's Hospital, where my doctor was a very, very serious man named Dr. Wimmer. And over breakfast this morning, my dad shared, I'd forgotten this, that we referred to him as Dr. Doom. Is that right, Dad? Okay. He also wore a bow tie, which enhanced his very serious appearance. He was not one to smile or joke. And in a sense, this direct approach was good, but I found him to be very grim myself. Well, one day at the clinic, something mysterious happened. A bunch of toy glider airplanes had appeared. I'm not sure the provenance of these airplanes, perhaps a donation from someone. And before anyone knew it, apparently Dr. Wimmer grabbed a stash of these airplanes and dashed out into the hall, which opened into a big open atrium. All the doctor's offices were around this open atrium. And as the story goes, he did something quite unexpected for Dr. Doom and totally playful. In the middle of this hospital setting, with a glimmer in his eye, he took a glider and released it over the side of the railing. And apparently some kids from the clinic were there too, and they all started flying the airplanes. And the air in this very serious place was filled with gliders. The air was filled with the sounds of laughter. As I remember it, we were seated in the waiting room when Dr. Wimmer returned from this unplanned aviary expedition, and it was so out of character. It showed a childlike side to a very serious person, and that was somehow more comforting than anything else. My dad has not forgotten that story, and neither did I, and we still talk about the day when the planes were flown. It didn't affect my treatment plan, but it bolstered all of our spirits that day. A little play went a long way towards healing. Today, like every day, we wake up empty and frightened. Don't open the door to the study and begin reading. Take down an instrument. Let the beauty we love be what we do. There are hundreds of ways to kneel and kiss the ground. So play can be powerful. Are we in agreement about this point so far? Is everyone still with me in the warm sanctuary? Okay. I know it can be tempting to relax deeply on a morning as warm as this. I guess the playful side of me should encourage sleep if that is how you like to play. I want to say this, though. I think it's important to hear this message from a pulpit, because sometimes we think of our spiritual lives as very serious things, as very serious places. And I want to lift up play from the pulpit so that we might celebrate it and think of it as part of the work of our spirit. But I also want to say that I think things can get in the way of our playing. For the children, right, this is a no-brainer. Of course we play. But for adults, sometimes things get in the way. So there's a woman named Brené Brown who is of no relationship to Stuart Brown. But she has also written about play. She is a researcher, a social worker and researcher, and she writes about shame of all things. Has anyone heard of her? Some of you have, yeah. She also gave a TED Talk, and it's one of the most top-viewed TED Talks of all time. In her work, she says that play is one of the key, most fundamental things to living a life that is joyful. But she says that we're blocked sometimes by a sense that our self-worth is tied up to our productivity. If the whole point of play is that we're doing something just to play for its own sake without any kind of deeper purpose, without ticking off something on our list, then that can get in the way of us actually embracing it. Brené Brown says that because for many of us the cultural imperative to always be productive, because that hampers our ability to make space and time for play, we actually need to be intentional about it. Stuart Brown also observes that because we associate play with being young, our whole notion of being a responsible adult is sometimes tied up with not being playful, right? So if our conception of being responsible and a good citizen is that we are serious and that we are no longer playful, then that can get in the way of our play. Brené Brown says she has had to develop some practices of playing in her life, and she talks about when she now realizes that she needs some play. Maybe she's at her desk doing her work, and she realizes that she's wandered off and been on Facebook for about 2 hours. She tries to stop what she's doing and actually intentionally play. She talks about one time she had a Netflix DVD on her desk that she hadn't watched in months and months, and her whole queue was backed up just because she hadn't found time to watch this. And she stopped and watched a movie for pleasure in the middle of her workday because she knew she needed some playtime. Now, maybe you are thinking, this sounds great, Mara. I'm on board. Play is awesome. But I just don't have time for all of this playing. And I think it's important to say that it's not only our internal stuff about needing to be productive or serious that gets in the way of playtime. Many of us work well more than the 40-hour week that the labor movement brought to us. Many of us are working more than one job, or are busy with many commitments, or come home at the end of a long day to begin a second shift caring for family members. Creating a world where everyone has time and space for play is, in my opinion, a justice issue. Given how important play is for our brains and our spirits, we need to create structures that support it, that help us actually do it. I also think at the same time, we need to remember that even though we need intentional spaces to just play, like the CEO that Brown talked about or Dr. Wimmer, we can evoke a spirit of play anywhere and anytime. We can bring play to work or chores or parenting. I think we can bring play to church committee meetings, and I will let you imagine what that might look like, lest I get in trouble with Kent later for giving you ideas. There's an episode in a show that I love called Parenthood. This show is about a family. It's about two older parents and their four adult grown children and those children's respective families. And in an episode about Thanksgiving a few years ago, the whole family has gathered for the meal, and of course, after the meal, you can imagine the kitchen is a disaster. And the mother reveals that every year she's just gone in and cleaned up the whole mess herself, but this year she sort of decides to go on strike and just leaves the kitchen to see what happens. Well, one by one, the four adults start going in, and they see the mess, and they decide that maybe they should do something to clean up. Well, one of them gets the great idea to go over to the radio, puts on some music. It's a fabulous early 90s hip-hop song, and I will spare you my rendition of it. So they all start dancing. They're doing the dishes are clanging, but it's a spontaneous dance party in the kitchen. And it pans over to the mother and father, the matriarch and patriarch, and they're thinking, we actually did do something right. Don't open the door to the study and begin reading. take down an instrument. Let the beauty we love be what we do. There are hundreds of ways to kneel and kiss the ground. What looks like play in our lives takes different shapes and forms. For some, it's a morning in the garden. For others, it's a game of basketball. Or maybe it's cooking, or walking in the Wissahickon, or catching up on the new season of Mad Men. Maybe it's dancing while doing the dishes, or flying paper planes in strange locations. Maybe it's pulling an occasional prank, or making monster noises with your baby. Maybe it's wrestling like the polar bear and the husky. Whatever play is for you, my prayer is that we can make time each and every day, knowing our very lives depend on it. Let us remember that play is our birthright and that we are worthy of it. Let us now go forth in the spirit of play, and may it be so now and in the days to come. Amen.